At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pulse of Finns Nation. I'm your host, Louis Sung. I am joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I am joined by Eric Wideke, who is somewhere in the background there. He'll be back, I'm sure. And also joined by Alfredo Arteaga of the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast, whose audio feed you will be seeing the show after this goes to finish with their live viewing. All right. So today what we're going to be talking about is what we should have been talking about last week, but then we had the breaking news that was the Tua contract extension talks, or the lack thereof. Not going to get into all that. If you have any interest in knowing about what we're talking about with Tua, you can just go watch last week's show. You can go listen to last week's show on the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast feed that has all the thoughts that you could ever ask for. So we're going to do our very best to avoid even bringing up the topic of Tua today. So with that being said, we're going to get into the defensive side of the ball. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the offensive side. Is it going to be better than what the Miami Dolphins had last season? There were certain units that we said, you know what, it's actually better. Certain units, we decided it was not going to be as good. Offensive line, obviously, was the winner on the not so good. Today, we're going to be talking about the defense. Is the Miami Dolphins defense, unit for unit, going to be better than what we saw in 2023, at least on paper? On paper is what we're going to be judging right now. Training camp is going to be happening very soon, and we're going to get a better idea of what it's going to look like. So we'll get into all that. Before that, really quick, just go ahead and mention, as always, the show is brought to you by PrizePicks.com. PrizePicks.com is the revolutionary fantasy platform where you can pick up to 6 different players across professional sports leagues if you are in regular PrizePicks states. Well, that's one way to put it. I think you can. Can you bet horses too on PrizePicks.com? I'm not sure. Maybe that's something they'll add in the future. So in any case, you can use the promo code 5, that's FIVE, and they will match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. Again, the promo code 5, FIVE. Go to PrizePicks.com, deposit your $100, and let PrizePicks give you $100 of their dollars for you to play with and get started winning today. Also, we're going to go ahead and throw up there the jerseys305.com sponsor, and I'm going to play the video for you as Ethan Skolnick explains how it works.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called jerseys305.com. That's jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with 5 Reasons Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
And so again, that's jerseys305.com. 10% off when you use the promo code 5 when you make your next order there. All right. Now, what we're going to talk about, once again, we're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball, then, which is what we should have done again last week, but Tua took precedence because, of course, he did. Indade says, Vamos Gatos, Dolphins have a higher floor than a higher ceiling before the start of the regular season. First of all, yes, congratulations to the world, the NHL champion Florida Panthers, and they've just been touring that Stanley Cup all over South Florida. So kudos to you if you happen to run into them and you were able to celebrate along with them. They are very happy about this, obviously, as all South Floridians should be. I personally have never been able to get into hockey myself. I never understood why if you trip somebody with your stick, that's a penalty, but slamming them, ramming them into the wall, somehow that's legal in hockey. I don't understand how that works, but maybe somebody will explain it to me one day. Now, we're going to talk about the Miami Dolphins defense, and we're going to start actually with the secondary, not because it is not usually I think people would start with the interior defensive line. That's usually how things go. I'm going to go against the grain. We're going to talk about the corners and the safeties first. The reason why? It just happens to be the first position that comes up when I sort everything by position on the website. So we're going to talk about the cornerbacks. So is this unit better than what the Miami Dolphins had in 2023? Just to recap what Miami currently has on the roster as of July 2nd, we currently have cornerback Ethan Bonner, who is a super speedster of his own right. Apparently, people have been saying that he's really fast himself. Storm Duck, the undrafted free agent out of Louisville and probably one of the best names in football today. We also have Kendall Fuller. He's the veteran out of Virginia Tech, 9-year veteran from formerly of the Washington Commanders. So Kendall Fuller, he's the big addition to the secondary this year. He's the one who's going to be ideally taking the place of Xavien Howard, who has now departed and still looking for a team. I'm thinking that he may not find a team for a little bit. So make of that what you will with Xavien Howard. Isaiah Johnson, rookie out of Syracuse. Kader Coe, who's still hanging around. There's a couple of other guys in here. Jason Maitre, I'm not even sure if that's how you say his name or not, but he's also a rookie out of Wisconsin. Saran Neal, he's a 7-year veteran. He's going to basically be, if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be the new... Oh my God, I'm completely blanking on his name. The special teams ace. What was his name? Did anybody remember?
Belcher.
No, who?
What the hell was his name? No, that's a good fucking question.
I can't remember his name. I can't believe it. It hurts so much because we were singing his praises not too long ago, and now I can't even remember the guy's name. It's the veteran who was with New England for years and years and years, and he came to Miami.
Justin Bethel.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Duke. Oh, my God. I'm so embarrassed.
From Presbyterian College.
Oh, okay. So that's the guy's name. So Saran Neal's going to take Justin Bethel's spot on the roster, I reckon. Nick Needham is still there. He's cross-training at corner and safety. Jalen Ramsey is still here. He's going to be working as a corner and a safety as well. You still have Cam Smith. You still have Elijah Campbell. And now also you have your safeties. You have Javon Holland still hanging around. You have Jordan Colbert. He's an undrafted rookie out of Rhode Island. Marcus May. Miami managed to pick him up, and if he's healthy, he's obviously talented. Patrick McMorris is their rookie draft pick out of California. Mark Perry, a safety out of TCU. And the one that was a year late, but we'll take him anyway now, Jordan Poyer, formerly of the Buffalo Bills, the veteran who all but had the neon sign last season that said, Miami, sign me. He wanted more money, didn't get it, went back to Buffalo, and now he's signing a vet minimum deal to come to Miami. I guess he's just had enough of the cold weather. So, gentlemen, I want to ask you guys, and I'll start with you, Duke, exactly where do you stand on this Miami Dolphins secondary? Is it better than last year's on paper? Is it worse? Is it about the same? How do you measure everything out?
I think it's going to be better. I think they're going to move Jalen Ramsey around. I think that Kendall Fuller is still playing good football. We should see some improvement from Cam Smith, which is the fact that he's going to get on the field, and he's a talented player. We still have Kader Kohu. Nick Needham is back and should be healthy. I like the addition of Poyer. I think the addition of Marcus May helps. I like Elijah Campbell. So they've added a piece or two. I think what they lost in the version of Xavien Howard that we had, we're going to get back in Kendall Fuller. So I think just worst case is they've stayed the same. And they were fairly good secondary last year when Jalen Ramsey was playing.
All right. And Eric, let's hear from you, my friend. How are you doing today, first of all?
Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good.
As far as the secondary goes, I'm looking at a lot more, at least in the safety room. I like the safety room a lot better. Last year, you know, outside of Javon Holland and, oh my God, I'm blanking out on the guy from Detroit that we had last year. I liked them. I wish we would have gotten him back, but I understand.
Deshaun Elliott.
You are an encyclopedia of names that for some reason we have already blanked on. I appreciate that about you, sir.
Yeah, I don't know how I missed Deshaun Elliott. I think that, you know, you can make an argument that Elliott and Poyer are a push. I think May is a massive upgrade over what you had last year, and Brandon Jones is kind of that third safety. Xavien Howard, I think just having Kendall Fuller being a couple years younger, I think that that's probably going to make him a little bit more effective than Xavien Howard would be for you going into this year. I'm treating Cam Smith like an addition to the secondary because he didn't exist last year. And I'm looking at, you know, just a lot more depth, addition by subtraction with no Eli Apple back there in the secondary. So I think that there is some moderate improvement in the secondary this year. It's not like a huge gulf, but I think that they're certainly better. They're deeper. I like what they've got on paper this year.
And I think part of it is also, like Duke mentioned earlier, the versatility of it all. Because you have Jalen Ramsey, who's likely to be running around the field this time. He's probably not going to just be shadowing whoever the top wide receiver on the field is at the time. So he'll be playing safety sometimes. He'll be playing in the slot. He'll be playing on the boundary. You never know what he's going to be doing. Yeah, Kendall Fuller can do the same thing. If really push came to shove, he can play in the slot. He can play on the boundary. You have Nick Needham, again, cross-training at both corner and at safety. You're going to have all these different options available to you, and the addition of the likes of Jordan Poyer, of Marcus May, those are veteran additions that you can't overlook, because this is one thing I've always preached on over the years, is that even if a player is not necessarily the same player they were once upon a time, they still have the benefit of experience, which is something that you can pass along to the younger generation. I am sure that in the time that he's been here, Austin Jackson has learned a lot from Teron Armstead. I am hoping that Patrick Paul is going to learn a lot from Teron Armstead, but we're not going to go down that rabbit hole just yet. Alf, where are you standing on the secondary for Miami? Is it improved? Is it about the same as last year, depending on the subtractions? Is it worse than last year's?
No, it's much better. First of all, Xavien Howard was not available to you down the stretch. He missed games during the middle of the season. Jalen Ramsey missed the first half of the season. That alone is going to make the secondary better. And I think they're going to be played in different roles. You have Cam Smith, who is in his second year, 1 year of experience under his belt. He should be better. And more importantly, it's the system that's going to have Jalen Ramsey in better spots to make more plays. He's going to be asked to do more, which I thought was the dumbest thing that the defense did last year, is pay $23 million to a cornerback and then just hide him out on the boundary all game. He's going to play in the slot, and he's going to be nickel. He's going to play the star position. He's going to play short safety. He's going to play in the box. He's going to play high safety. He's going to play everywhere. And that alone is going to make them a much better secondary unit. I do think that one of the guys that they picked up as an undrafted free agent, Isaiah Johnson, I think he will eventually move to safety. But one of those guys is going to have to make it on special teams, because C'Ron Neal is a lock. He's going to be a special teamer, just as, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on, but Cam Brown as a linebacker, he will stick as well. So, yeah, I would say this is a much more improved secondary.
Certainly more versatile, and that's definitely going to be important with the way that Anthony Weaver wants to run this
defense. And deeper. Yeah, and deeper.
And not only just because of the players they added, it's because of the recurring players that we're going to be bringing back. Nick Needham has had a full year now to get past that Achilles. So I'm hoping that we're going to go back to seeing the Nick Needham of old, back when Brian Flores first discovered him and saw that he was worth investing in, even though you, me, and everybody's mother had decided that, you know what, Nick Needham is not worth keeping around. Listen, if Brian Flores deserves credit for one thing, it's Nick Needham, because we would have passed on him instantly if we had had our way. So basically a consensus right here with the secondary. Everybody is saying that it's going to be better than last year's, which definitely makes me happy. Now we can talk about the defensive line. I'll talk about the interior and the linebackers, like the edge rushers, as two separate units, just because edge rushers, like, they get lumped into that whole defensive line role, but in reality they're listed as linebackers really anyway. So we're going to go ahead and talk about the defensive line first. We'll get into obviously the addition of Calais Campbell very recently, a 17-year veteran wearing Ndamukong Suh's old number 93. Neville Gallimore is still here. He was one of the guys who did not get the boot from the brief purge, as it were. Charmaine Taylor is saying trade Nick Needham. No, I'm not going to do that. That's important depth right there. I'm going to keep Nick Needham around, because the problem with Miami is that for whatever ungodly reason, when it comes to the secondary depth, they are snake bit. Like, you lose players going out of style in the secondary. Corners, safeties, dropping like flies. You cannot afford to lose Nick Needham, especially not in a defense that demands versatility. It demands versatility. It's not just helpful. It's not an advantage. This defense needs people who can basically run the amoeba defense, as it were. Everybody needs to be playing everywhere. So Nick Needham is too important to just trade him. Not that I think you could get much out of trade for him anyway. What could you possibly get, a sixth or a seventh rounder? Nah, it's not worth it. Going back to the defensive tackles. So we went over Calais Campbell. He's actually listed as a defensive tackle on Miami's website. I think he can also play defensive end as well. That's going to help more versatility there. Like I mentioned, Bill Gallimore, Deshaun Hand is still here. Jonathan Harris, 4-year veteran out of Lindenwood. Benito Jones, he's our nose tackle. I know that Duke, Ron, and Chad, you're a big guy with the whole big beefy dudes in the middle kind of guy, right? Like, I remember a few years ago when we were lamenting the loss of Paul Soliai, and we're saying we just want like a 300-pound guy just to clog up the middle. Well, we got that again in Benito Jones, 335 pounds. He's probably the biggest dude on the roster at this point. Mario Kendricks, Isaiah Mack. You got Leonard Payne, a rookie out of Colorado. Brandon Peely's still around, for whatever that's worth. And, of course, the new headliner, or the new old headliner, I should say, Zach Sealer, who is now going to be without his pepper. So no Christian Wilkins. Just his loss alone makes things a lot more difficult to measure out. And Tyre Tarte, who is formerly of the Tennessee Titans. So he's a whole story in and of himself, but we'll get into that as we discuss the defensive line. Al, I'll start with you this time. Where are you on this defensive tackle unit? Where are you on this defensive end unit? Do you feel like this unit has gotten better? Has it gotten worse? Or are we just about dead even with last year?
No, the edge players are much, much better. First of all, you use the first-round pick on one. Then you use the fourth-round pick on another one.
Well, we're making the edge players separate from the DTs.
Well, if we're just going to talk about the defensive tackles, then they're about the same, maybe a slight downgrade. But remember that last year they had Christian Wilkins play a massive amount of snaps, and you got to figure that, you know, although he was pretty good all the way throughout, you got to figure that you're not getting an effective Christian Wilkins toward the end of the season when you're playing that many snaps. They're going to play a lot of guys and in rotation. I do expect Calais Campbell to play plenty as a three tech, and now they have the versatility to play a lot of even fronts. And since they have the versatility to play a lot of even fronts, I thought that's how they were best last year, but they didn't want to waste Christian Wilkins and Zach Sealer playing even fronts. I think they're able to do that now. They have guys to fill certain roles. Neville Gallimore is more of a zero, one shade, and three tech. Benito Jones is more of a zero, one tech. You know, Brandon Peely, who knows what we have there. We'll see in camp. Sean Hand's a three tech. Jonathan Harris is a five tech. And you have Calais Campbell, who, if you listen to Wick Martindale, is considered the best five tech in all of football. So I think it's status quo, but it's going to be different than what they had last year. You're going to play a lot of guys and play a lot of different guys, a lot of different snaps. So while last year they were playing a very strict four-man interior rotation with two guys taking most of the snaps, I think you might see them play somewhere around five on the interior now. and with really only two guys with higher snap counts. And I think both guys will have lower snap counts than what Zach Seeler had last year, meaning Zach Seeler and Calais Campbell. So they're going to play plenty of guys on the inside. And what I'm jazzed about is the versatility that they're going to have inside to play a bunch of different fronts that they didn't want to play last year or they couldn't play last year.
So you're basically putting it in the lens of the additional depth makes up for the loss of the star power at the top of the roster.
Yes, because if you take an injury, and this has been true in football since time immemorial, if you're top heavy, you're usually there's a saying that says, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep. If you're top heavy in talent, then you have no depth. They take an injury to a Christian Wilkins or Zach Seeler last year, they were essentially done. And that's what you saw outside in the edge players. They're bringing guys off the street toward the end of the year. This year, they have enough guys that they're going to be able to keep these guys fresh all along the front. So I think that makes them better up front as well.
All right, Duke, let's hear your thoughts on the defensive tackles. How are you feeling about this group? Better, worse, or just about the same?
I agree with everything Alf said. I think it's going to be a different setup, and you're going to have the rotation more. And I've been saying that since Anthony Weaver was signed as defensive coordinator. If you look at what Baltimore did last year, they had one defensive tackle that played kind of the majority of the snaps, and then they had a second defensive tackle kind of play about half, and then everybody else rotated. So I think Zach Seeler is going to be your primary guy that takes the most snaps. Probably Calais Campbell is going to be your number two, and then they're going to rotate the other guys in. I did a preliminary 53-man roster because I'm bored and there's nothing going on right now. So the five defensive tackles that I have making it are Seeler and Campbell, Benito Jones, Neville Gallimore, and Jonathan Harris. I don't know if T.R. Tartt makes it, but I think it's going to be one of those things. You mentioned about the nose tackle earlier. If you look at the nose tackle for the Ravens, Michael Pierce, he's 6 foot, 355 pounds. Benito Jones, 6'1", 335. So,
I mean, he's still not as big, but dang, he's still bigger than most guys we've had.
He's not as heavy, but it's a type. Okay, so there's a type of player that it looks like Anthony Weaver is going for. And if you look at some of the other, like the draft picks, I mean, if you look at Kamara and Chop Robinson, they fit a type as well. So I think what Alf said, they're going to attack this not with superstar play at a couple of spots and just play heavy snaps. The top two defensive linemen snaps were obviously Seeler and Christian Wilkins. And they played 894 for Wilkins and 856 for Zach Seeler. That was third and fourth on the team overall defensively. They're going to attack this with the rotation. So they're just going to throw a wave of dudes. So it's going to be kind of like that. They're not going to try to, you know, go with this with the just attack it with a couple of guys. So you're going to see reps when Zach Seeler is in there with Neville Gallimore, and you're going to see Calais Campbell in there with Benito Jones and so on and so forth. And you're going to see that rotation. So, I like what they've done. Are they overall better? Maybe. I think the talent drop off between what you have in Wilkins and the next guy up. Although I like Campbell, he's just an older player, but, I think as a unit, they're going to be solid.
All right. And Eric, let's hear your thoughts on this. And I'll probably end up extending it just a little bit based on certain things I wanted to touch on. But let's go here and hear from you.
Yeah. You know, I hate to, echo the sentiments of just about everyone, everyone that's come before. But it really is. You're pretty much trading top end talent for depth. And the other thing that I think that doesn't get considered is, at least if you not comparing the two players one-to-one, but if you take the production that Christian Wilkins had last year and you take the production that Calais Campbell had last year, the drop-off is definitely there, but I don't think it's as steep as a lot of people would think. And I think that you are so much better behind your top two guys with the depth that they brought in. I like Jonathan Harris quite a bit. I think Neville Gallimore is, you know, just a nice rotational piece. Benito Jones is your standard run-of-the-mill nose tackle. No complaints there. And the other thing is, I think with a guy like Zach Sealer, who had double-digit sacks last year, and he was playing just about, you know, every snap on defense. Obviously, not every snap, but he was top five on the defense in terms of snaps. Imagine how much more effective he's going to be in those pass rush situations when he's a little bit fresher towards the end of games. So I just look at things like that, and I think that the versatility that Anthony Weaver is going to have to work with. I think the defensive line, in a weird way, is probably less talented, but has the potential to be more effective this year, if it makes sense. I'd say overall in talent, there's probably a drop off, but I love the depth behind the top two guys.
And I hear what you're saying, and I do in principle agree with you guys. But as far as talent goes, there's one guy that I briefly brought up, but we haven't really mentioned him as being part of the group because it almost seems like he's, bizarrely enough, he's the odd man out. Tyre Tarte was brought in. And as far as guys that we've brought in just from the outside, I feel like of all the guys besides Calais Campbell, Tarte is probably the most talented player of the group. But we're not talking about him like he's going to make the roster. In fact, if anything, I feel like we're discussing him like he's just not going to make it. And I feel like part of the issue is that he's kind of facing the same accusations, as it were, as a Jordan Phillips once did, in that his motor's not very high. He's good for a couple of plays, and then he just kind of falls off, and then he's good for a couple of plays, and then he just falls off. It's like you have to keep revving the engine. You got to keep like slamming that accelerator just to get him to move. And so I'm wondering, are we being too harsh on Tarte? Are we dismissing his talent because he's just not showing like he has enough care in him? Or are we reading this in the sense that Tart's not going to make the team just because the accusations seem to be true? He's not doing what he needs to do. Anybody?
I'll go ahead. I think he's battling for that kind of fourth or fifth defensive tackle spot. It's going to be between a guy like him and Jonathan Harris. I mean, I generally try not to take anything away from OTAs and minicamp. But the moment OTAs and minicamp were over, they went out and signed a couple guys. So that usually tells you that what they've seen, they're not comfortable with. So, I mean, to me, the top three defensive tackles that are going to see the most snaps are going to be Sealer, Campbell, and Benito Jones. I think after that, the rotational guys, and he might fit in that rotation. So at that point, when you're in defensive tackle four and five, it's any of those that you want to pick, really.
But here's my question. Does Tyre Tarte feel okay with being considered fourth or fifth? Because this is a man who went to the Tennessee Titans and said, get me out of here. I don't want to play here anymore. And for better or worse, they did what he asked, but you have to question, why did he ask out? Is it because he felt like he was being underutilized? Is he because they felt they were being too hard on him? So those are the thoughts that you have to come into account, because if you're Tyre Tarte and you are a guy who forced his way out of Tennessee just to land in Miami and what, ride the bench for most of the time? So Alf, I'll go ahead and ask you, do you have any thoughts on the Tyre Tarte situation, or are you just kind of, do you expect him to make it through, or is he going to be one of those camp castoffs?
Well, he is, you know, he is right there on the bubble because his history has been that he's not, you know, let's just say he doesn't have the greatest motor of any defensive tackle in the league, okay? So he tends to fade during seasons. We shall see how it works out for him. He's going to have a definitive role here to play. We'll see if limited snaps and that defined role is going to get the best out of him. But when he's actually playing, he's pretty damn good. So I'm interested to see how that works out, and we'll learn a lot come camp.
And because, what would that role be, Alf?
Well, he's basically going to play inside. He's going to play from the three tech in. So he's one of two guys, meaning him and Deshaun Hand, who are going to fill that role. So they got two guys to fill one role. Sealer's going to play from three to five out, never inside. I would say Calais Campbell's going to play everywhere. He's going to play even head up on the nose as possible. Benito Jones just a zero and a one. Brandon Peeler is a zero and a one. And Gallimore is a zero and a one, occasional three. So, you know, he has a role to fill. We'll see if he'll fill it. But it's really up to him. You know, the reason he really hasn't, you know, signed a big contract as of late is because, you know, his conditioning issues. It's going to be really interesting to see that first the first schedule that they give you for training camp on that Friday, I believe the 28th, to see who is on the PUP, because whoever's on the PUP is whoever failed their conditioning test. So we shall see. He's never been the big motor guy. He's just been the guy who can give you a very, very strong 20 snaps in a game. So we'll see what he does with this opportunity. It's a really, really good one for him.
All right. So now we'll move over to the edge player. So like I said, I wanted to categorize them separately from the rest of the defensive linemen because they play such vastly different roles. So as far as edge players go, you've got Shaq Barrett, you've got Bradley Chubb, you've got Cam Good. I know he's in that group. Rookies Mo Kamara, you've got Chop Robinson, you've got Jalen Phillips coming back off his Achilles and is really starting to look like he is going to be ready for the season. Zeke Vandenberg, I think we've kind of forgotten about him. I think there was a little bit of hype for him coming around in camp last season before he ended up getting hurt. But we've got a few horses in this to take a look at here. So I'll go ahead and start with you this time, Eric. Do you feel like Miami is – I feel like I already know the answer to this, at least on paper. Do you feel like Miami is better, worse, or about the same as far as the edge rushers go? I know we don't have Melvin Ingram anymore. We I don't think anybody cares, but we lost our three old guys. they're gone. But there was a loss of Emmanuel Ogba, and I guess you could kind of slot him in as an edge. But let's hear from you. Where do you feel about the edge rushers?
You know, I feel like the edge rushers, there's a September answer and there's a December answer for me. When it comes to the September edge rushers, I'm not skeptical of Jalen Phillips, but I think that the Dolphins might be wise to kind of slow play him, even if he is chomping at the bit.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm glad to see that he is. I think that they should probably be a little bit more cautious with him. You know, you're going to have Shaq Barrett, you're going to have Mo Kamara, you're going to have Chop Robinson. You know, so as far as the Dolphins in September, maybe I don't feel as good about them as I did last year's group of edge rushers. But I think come November, December, this team is significantly better on the edges. Because you're going to have Mo Kamara and Chop Robinson with potentially some significant playing time under their belts and you know, coming into their own in the league. And then you've got Shaq Barrett, who I think is a very good veteran add on the along the edge. And then you're going to have Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips returning. I think Cam Good is a nice rotational rusher. I don't see a world in which at least – by mid-season, you know, the edge rushing group isn't potentially the most improved group on this Dolphins defense, potentially. And I say that because I think that there's another group coming up that might be even more improved, but I'll save that part for later. To make a long story short, I think that they are much better at the edge, specifically probably, you know, by mid-season.
All right, Alf, let's hear from you next.
Yeah, I like this edge group. All you had to do, and I talked about this earlier, was see what happened last year. And you get into the playoffs, and now you're playing guys off the streets. You were asking Melvin Ingram to play ridiculous amount of snaps and running with running backs. You were running with, he was running with James Cook on wheel routes toward the end of that game against the Bills at the end of the season. If you get reasonable health, okay, this is a very, very, very deep room. You use the first round pick on one, you use the fourth round pick on another guy that I think is going to be pretty good. Cam Good is coming back. Zeke Vandenberg, there is an investment there, so we got to see what the hell there is. Even Grayson Murphy was a really productive player in college. This is a very, very deep, deep group. And I do expect Jalen Phillips to be back sooner rather than later. I do expect him to be back before Bradley Chubb. You sign Shaq Barrett. You still have Quentin Bell, who is a guy who, you know, a lot of people liked in that building, who's a really, really good athlete. And then Calais Campbell played on the edge last year in Atlanta. Like, they almost have too many guys, which is a good problem to have. So this is a really, really good group, and if they get reasonable health, if they get these guys back, it's probably the best group on the entire team.
Does it make up for the loss of Andrew Van Ginkel?
I would hope so. It's a million guys. Come on.
You know? I mean, to be fair, Andrew Van Ginkel, ABG proved himself over and over again. Like, it was scary how good he was when he was out there. Like, and it's baffling to me that Miami couldn't at least make an offer of kind. I would have loved to have Andrew Van Ginkel back. Like, this kid, that kid plays so hard, and he came out of nowhere in a way. Like, he was what, a fifth round pick?
So yeah, but you got to understand, Van Ginkel has to say yes. He's getting a starting role in Minnesota. Yep. He would not have, under any circumstances, had a starting role here.
Yep, absolutely.
So that goes into the equation. Okay, so when a lot of people say, oh, I wish that we would have got Van Ginkel back. Well, his agent probably would have asked you, okay, are you going to trade Bradley Chubb so that way I can start? So that way I can earn a second, so I can earn a second contract when my contract's up in 2 years? The answer was probably going to be no. So I'm going to say, yeah, this is a much better group, and Andrew Van Ginkel is pretty much replaced.
And there just seemed to be some, maybe a little bit of a, descent in the the Bradley Chubb situation in the chat. Parrish Stevens says moving on from Bradley Chubb next year. Charmaine Taylor in the chat says that she likes Chubb to play in the first week. So I don't think that that's going to happen. I think Jalen Phillips is going to come back before Bradley Chubb, just on the simple fact that he's just this younger super freak athlete that Bradley Chubb is not necessarily. Not to say he's not a good athlete, but
yeah, he's younger.
Jalen Phillips is younger, and I don't know, man. There's something about him. Like, he just feels like he's superhuman in a way. So, Duke, let's hear from you. How do you feel about this edge group?
Well, I think the other guys covered it pretty well. I'll add this to it. When you consider, if you look at Campbell as a guy that can play on the edge, when this group is fully healthy, it might be the best pass rush unit in the entire league. From 1 to 6. Because you got to think about it. Right now, you're looking at your top three guys, your top three veterans. Your fourth guy is a first-round pick, or if he gets beat out by Mo Kamara. But either way, you've got 5 or 6 guys there that could potentially play or start for other teams. So this is a... Yeah, very deep unit, and when healthy, could be one of the best in the league, if not the best.
All right, well, that's strong words, Zuga. I hope you're right. Let's transition over to the inside linebackers, the more traditional guys here. So gone is Jerome Baker. So he's the big name. We actually ended up, for lack of a better term, we basically traded player for player. So out goes Jerome Baker, and in comes Jordan Brooks from the Seattle Seahawks. We have moved on from the likes of Aubrey Miller. We've moved on from Calvin Munson. He's gone. Duke Riley's still here. Channing Tindall is still here. And I know that some people have thoughts about that, whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. We did go ahead and still have David Long Jr. So he's still here. So, and I'm just looking through this list. Alpha, I think you wanted to talk about briefly Cam Brown. So I'll go ahead and let you get started first, and you can educate us if you'd like. What are we looking at here as far as this linebacker group? Is it better, worse, or about the same?
Well, all you need to know is that Jordan Brooks is an upgrade over Jerome Baker, and Duke Riley is now LB4 when he was LB3 last year. I think Duke Riley or Channing Tindall could be on the bubble for the roster, because I do believe Cam Brown is making the team as a special teams specialist. There's a reason they signed these guys who've played so many snaps on special teams. In fact, go look at Cam Brown's snap count on special teams. He's one of the better special teams players in the league. So, yeah, I would tend to believe that you have two very, very versatile starters in David Long and Jordan Brooks who can play fill and scrape. They could play inside, outside. They could both rush the passer. Anthony Walker is a sub-package linebacker, and Duke Riley is LB4. So, you know, one of Channing Tindall or Duke Riley could be sacrificed, and there is a savings if you cut Duke Riley, by the way. So this is a very, very deep group, and I like that they managed to add on a special teamer at the position in Cam Brown, who I think is going to be a pretty good player for them, especially with the new rules, which are going to be necessary to have good special teams players.
All right. Duke, let's hear from you.
Yeah, I think I agree with what he said. I believe the linebacker group is going to be it's definitely more athletic, I think. Brooks offers a little bit more athleticism than Baker, although I think it's fairly close. I like Channing Tindall to make the roster as a guy that they can use in a variety of ways, but this may be his last chance. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of the stuff on offense and, you know, Tua and all his offensive coordinators and the offensive line and their coaches and all that. Well, this is the third defensive coordinator for Channing Tindall in 3 years. So this is a, you know, he's going to have an uphill battle, but I think he's got the athleticism. I mean, we forget the guy was 6'1", 240 or something like that and ran a 4.4, a 4.3 or something ridiculous. So the guy's got plenty of athleticism to go around. But he, like some of these other, you know, bubble guys have to make their name on special teams. And so if he can show that, he's definitely going to, I think you keep him and get rid of Duke Riley just for the cap savings part. But I kind of agree. I think it's between him and Duke Riley as a, for that additional linebacker spot. But I like the fact that the guys have gone out and got us, particularly David Long. I know there were some question marks about his health last year, you know, and the stuff that Mike Vrabel said and, you know, about him and the soft tissue injuries. And he played every game last year. So
I think he missed one. Didn't he miss one?
He played in every game. He missed some time with that collision with Javon Holland. But yeah. He did not. I think he came back in the game, or one of them did, but either way, he didn't miss the next week. He played the next week. So, I like him. I think he's going to be, they're going to need the linebackers to step up and make a lot of tackles and play a lot of snaps. If you look at Baltimore's snap counts, their top two defensive snap takers were Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith. So you figure to see, Brooks and Long on the field a lot, and hopefully we hear their name called because they're making big plays.
Eric?
Yeah, so I kind of teased in my last answer that I there's a position group upcoming that I think is going to be the most improved on the team, and I think it's going to be the linebacker spot for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think David Long is going to be better this year than he was last year. Not that he was bad last year, but I think definitely towards the back half of the season, you started to really see him kind of come into his own. And then on top of that, you're looking at, I think that there is an ocean-sized gap between Anthony Walker as your third linebacker, Duke Riley as your third linebacker. The only reason why Anthony Walker isn't starting somewhere isn't because of his ability, it's because of his injury history. So I think getting him as your third linebacker is just such a massive upgrade. Jordan Brooks over Jerome Baker. Jerome Baker was a good player. Jordan Brooks is a very good player. I like Jordan Brooks over Jerome Baker. I think that he's a little bit more of a three down player, a little bit more physical in the run game than Baker was, and he's nearly as good in space. So you're looking at a linebacker position that went from pretty thin last year, when you were looking at, when you were watching Duke Riley on the field pretty consistently in that Kansas City game and in that Buffalo game. And don't get me wrong, he had his moments, but he's just not a guy that you want playing significant snaps on a playoff caliber team on the defense. And I think that they've got guys in front of him now that are a lot better. I would like to see Channing Tindall make the team over Riley. At least I hope he does, because, you hate to think that a guy that you drafted as highly as you did as Tindall just didn't work out with his physical tools. But sometimes those things happen. But I think that just, for the upside play, I would probably keep Tindall around. Unless he just shows that there's just nothing there in terms of development for him. So, I think this is the most improved unit on the team. This is probably the best linebacker core I can remember the Dolphins having in over a decade.
And that's saying something, because we've had a lot of linebackers come in and out as far as the middle goes. But interestingly enough, I do agree that the group is improved. But Jerome, like the loss of Jerome Baker, here's the thing about it. Because if you're going to have Jordan Brooks, is Jordan Brooks going to spend most of his time in coverage? Or is he going to be doing what Jerome Baker did, which is he rushes the passer, he does his best to cover, not always effectively, but he did pretty much more than anybody ever gave him credit for. And he was a big time tackler, so he was all over the place. Now, I'm not saying that Jordan Brooks is not going to do all those things, but does Jordan Brooks have the same level of versatility, or is he going to be having a more of a defined role in that he's going to be like doing coverage in the middle of the field most of the time? Because everybody likes to talk about Jordan Brooks as a cover guy. So I'm very interested to see how much they're going to use him also as a extra pass rushing weapon, because that was the thing that Jerome Baker did very well. And most of the time he wasn't even able to do it because they needed him to be able to run around and chase after guys because they just weren't getting any kind of coverage in the linebacking spot. So that's what I want to see. I want to see if Jordan Brooks can provide that level of it. And I also want to see if he can provide the same level of versatility that Jerome Baker did. I see Parrish Stevens in the chat talking about he has more versatility than Baker. He was a first rounder for a reason. And listen, I'm not saying that Jordan Brooks can't do it, but I know that there has been, at least in the past, there have been question marks about Jordan Brooks' ability to cover. Now, he did very well last season, no doubt about it. And the guys in 3 yards per carry, they also talked about it in OnlyFins, only $3 a month, discord.gg/OnlyFins, $3 a month. You can get in on that. But they talk about it. They mentioned Jordan Brooks has vastly improved. There were clips, though, in the past where Jordan Brooks was not covering very well. And that was a thing with him. So I want to see more of what Jordan Brooks has to offer as far as traditional linebacker play. Now, the one guy that, and this is very interesting because we're talking about Duke Riley and Channing Tindall as possibly fighting for the fourth spot. We barely have talked about the guy who's number three. And I am assuming that everybody here is thinking it's Anthony Walker Jr. So what are our thoughts on this veteran player formerly of the Cleveland Browns?
Well, he's going to be a sub-package linebacker. And one thing about Jordan Brooks, to go back to that, he's been very, very good in coverage. That was a myth that was going around the internet because people just like to look at – people are really lazy, okay? And they don't like to actually watch film and actually watch people play. So what they do is they go on Football Reference and they look at his passer rating against, and they see a little high number and they say, okay, he's bad against the pass. What people don't realize is the passer rating against for linebackers is essentially useless, because if they're in the intermediate zone or if they drop zone in cover two and they complete an outlet pass or a dump off, that gets charged off to them. So if the quarterback throws a safety valve because you actually took away the deep crosser or the deep dig because you dropped successfully as a linebacker, that's actually a negative play for you on that stat. If you watch the film on Jordan Brooks, he's absolutely spectacular against the pass. And I would suggest watch the Cardinals game from last year in Arizona when Kyler Murray was already back. They have a tight end who's extremely good, and Trey McBride. He's going to be a really good player this year. So for you fantasy players, that's a guy that you have to keep an eye on. You got to watch Jordan Brooks take him into the deeper third and watch him trail him for about 30, 35 yards in pass coverage when the pass rush is not even getting there. And he's absolutely taking away one of the better pass catchers in all of football, one-on-one in trail technique. Jordan Brooks is really, really good against the pass. Anthony Walker Jr. is going to be a sub-package guy. He's good against the run. He's more of a fill linebacker, more of a two-gap guy, two-gap reader. So
he's a Landon, you know, Roberts.
A little bit. Nah, I would say he's more like a poor man's David Long. Okay? So he has a little bit more versatility. And Landon Roberts is just a fill linebacker. He's running two gaps and that's it. No, nothing else. He's not covering anybody. He's not doing anything else but running into two gaps. He's running into the A or to the B gap to fill it. That's it. That's all that Orlando Roberts does. Anthony Walker Jr. can play a little bit. He's a little bit more versatile. Okay. So it's a very, really good group. I agree with Eric. It's the best linebacking group that they've had here in a very, very long time.
All right. And we'll go ahead and round off the show with a little extra bonus of special teams, mostly because we can't fill special teams with a whole show. So when I say special teams, I don't mean like the special teams aces, the gunners, or anything like that. I'm talking about strictly the dudes who are involved with the kicking of the football. So there's nothing really to say, I don't think, about Blake Ferguson as the long snapper. He's still the long snapper. He probably will be the long snapper for years to come, because why the heck not? We have a history of legacy long snappers. We have Jason Sanders, who's still around. I personally, if I were the Dolphins, and maybe it's just because I'm gun shy when it comes to this position, because we had him doing well, and then he stopped doing well, and now he's back to doing well, kind of. And I don't know, I'm still nervous, but I would have preferred if Miami had brought in some kind of competition for Jason Sanders, but they didn't do that. And the most frustrating thing for me, at least, was when the Miami Dolphins had the opportunity to improve the punter position, and instead of going out and getting the recently exonerated punt god, Matt Araiza, they let him go to Kansas City, which is just baffling to me, that you let the potentially strongest legged punter in NFL history, before he even touches the field, to be able to just go to the world champs without even blinking. And instead of going out and getting somebody who could potentially not only compete, but possibly beat him out, you just went and re-signed Jake Bailey, who makes me so angry. He makes me long for the days of Matt Hawk. That's how bad he was last season. So I don't understand it. Duke, let's hear from you. How do you feel about the special teams? It's not even a question of whether you think they're better, worse, or the same. They're literally the same three guys. But what are your thoughts on special teams right now?
Well, I think it may have been Chad in a show several weeks ago that talked about Ferguson. Have you ever noticed him making a bad snap? I haven't. In my opinion, it's a set it and forget it position, and they have got a set it and forget it player. So no worries there. I think the concerns with Sanders, I think, stem mostly because he was making big money, and he had a down year in 2022. Last year, he had the big game against Dallas. I don't think he missed but one kick after like week six or something like that, and it was a block against it was the block in the Tennessee game. So he was fairly routinely good last year. He had the one extra point miss, which led for the epic Justin Herbert collapse. Other than that, he was fairly solid. Now, Bailey, on the other hand, was not as good. But the good thing there is the Dolphins were fifth in the fewest amount of punts. They only punted 53 times. Compare that to the Jets, who punted the most at 99 times. So Jake Bailey's mostly on the field to be a holder. So he's not – that's I think, what, like – three punts a game. So I did some of this research a while back, just looking at this. I think Bailey, he didn't have a lot of touchbacks. He had a pretty good percentage inside the 20. So overall, he wasn't the horrid kicker that we think. I believe it was a situation where his bad punts were just really, really bad. And so they
happened
out
a lot, Duke. It wasn't like one or two the whole year. Like every other game, he was shanking a punt. It was
a handful. Man. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's not the best. But again, I don't think it's as bad as people are thinking. And I'm hoping he's not on the field a lot. I mean, again, 53 punts last year. I'm hoping to see less than that. San Francisco had the fewest. Dallas had 44 punts. That's what I'm shooting for. No more than two a game. I'm hoping we don't have to see Bailey very much at all, unless he's holding the ball. So, the interesting thing is going to be, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago on the show, or maybe it was after the show, I don't remember, but I think the whole kickoff rule thing, I think for Miami, with the talent that they have to throw out there, and for us, kick returns, we'll be starting from the 30-yard line a lot. I think teams are just going to be like, you know what? I'm not putting the ball in Devon Achane's hands or Tyreek Hill's hands or Jalen Waddle or whoever else Miami wants to throw out there. They're just not going to do it. They're going to boot the ball out of the end zone and be like, you know what? We'll give them that extra 5 yards than what they got last year. Depending on what Miami's kick coverage looks like, that may be a Jason Sanders thing as well. So, you know, when you're playing some poor offensive teams, and we start out with the Jaguars, and they're not bad offensively. You got the Bills. But when you see teams like the Patriots or the Cardinals or some of these teams that have struggled, that are struggling with young quarterbacks or just bad teams overall, I think they're going to be like, you know what? I'm not going to take a chance kicking it to some guy that could score on us and flip this game. We'll give them the extra 5 yards. So that's my take on the whole kickoff thing. I don't think it's going to backfire completely on the NFL, but I don't think it's going to be as quite as exciting as they think it's going to be. I think teams will just start taking that extra 5 yards and playing defense. But as far as the three special teamers, Ferguson's the dude. Sanders is good. If he keeps it up, he was, I think, averages for us is percentages. So if he keeps it up, keep him around. Jake Bailey, we'll see.
Eric?
Yeah. I mean, that was very in-depth on special teams, probably more in-depth than I'm going to go with my answer here. I do agree that the Dolphins are uniquely suited to benefit from the kickoff rules, and I know that that's kind of cheating answering it that way. But I will say Jason Sanders, I think, is good. He's fine. Is he making more money than you like him to make? Probably. Blake Ferguson, like Duke said, rock solid. He's fine. And yeah, I mean, the Dolphins offense is better than it was last year. So hopefully Jake Bailey's just on the field a lot less. I think if you take a look at it, the reason why he's probably brought around is probably just because, if you guys remember, I don't remember who it was, Thomas Morstead, and being afraid of Jason Sanders kicking his hand. So, you know, Jake Bailey's probably just, you know, Jason Sanders is probably just a lot more comfortable with Jake Bailey as his holder. So whatever, if I have to suffer through some bad punts, in order to make some longer field goals or a game winning field goal, so be it. It's fine. I'll live with it. Whatever.
All right, Alf, let's hear from you, man. I feel a lot stronger about the punting thing than Duke and Eric do, just because I know that even if Miami doesn't punt a whole lot, it just baffles me that you're going to watch this guy punt last year and your first thought is, let's give him another 2-year extension. Like, you couldn't have found anybody. Like, what happened to Michael Turk? What happened to Matt Turk's nephew? Can we at least get him in here to try again? I just don't get it, man.
I don't care. I don't care too much about punting because I don't want them to punt that much.
No, I don't either. But if you have to, don't you want a good one?
Well, you know, he was very good 2 years before this past year. He had a bad year last year. Who knows what was his problem last year? I do expect them to bring somebody in for camp. They always do. They always bring a second punter and to get a good look. So who knows? Maybe they bring in somebody during camp and that guy sticks. But if not, they did last year. Remember that. And if not,
but they gave him guaranteed money though, Al. Like, half of his money is guaranteed.
I don't think they care about that. I don't think they care about that. I think they'll cut a guy if they have to. They've done it before. So, you know, I don't really mind him too much. I would have replaced him if I had, you know, at the start of preseason. I mean, at the start of the off season. But that they're bringing him back, it's just familiarity. It's second year in the system. And remember, because there was a lot of people that didn't want Danny Crossman back, okay? And a lot of people were really upset. Remember what this coaching staff last year did to Danny Crossman? They kept taking all of his special teams players to play them on defense and on offense, and they were leaving him with the scraps to try to form a special teams unit, to the point where the biggest play of the season was that punt return touchdown, and who was running as an R1 on that punt? Cam Good. When usually it's Andrew Van Ginkel running on that punt as an R1. But what happened to Van Ginkel? He got hurt earlier in that game because he was playing a lot of snaps on defense. So everything has a cause and effect and a ripple effect, okay? And now that Danny Crossman has his special teams players, he should have a better special teams unit. They should be forced. They should be better this year around this year. And, you know, they get to be judged by the players that they have. And they have a bunch of specialists. They have three specialists when they didn't have none before. So they should be better. That they're keeping Jack Bailey, I don't care. And Jason Sanders completely turned his season around. And make no mistake, that's part of the reason why Jake Bailey's probably still here, because they saved their expensive kicker. Okay.
Yeah, the holding thing. I know.
I don't think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden Jake Bailey's here. And remember, he was a holder in New England. Okay. They really care about that position. And all of a sudden, Jason Sanders is fixed. All of a sudden. And he was kicking good in cold weather, in bad weather. It didn't matter. Jason Sanders was good last year. So, yeah, I'm fine with the units. I'm interested to see what they do in camp.
And camp is coming up very shortly, and Alf will be there to watch everything that goes on, and you'll be getting updates from him and the 3 yards per carry guys. So make sure you're tuning into their podcast, obviously. More than likely, if you're listening to this show, it's because you're already subscribed to 3 yards per carry. Good for you. Best option you could have had. Also, make sure you're checking out once again. We're going to be finished with the show now. It's discord.gg/onlyfins, and all you have to do is $3 a month. Best inside information you can also get, too. So that's stuff. You're not allowed to share it, but you can be smiling knowing that you know it. So make sure you check that out. Also, go to prizepicks.com, use the promo code 5, that's FIVE, and they will match up to $100 on your initial deposit when you sign up. I'm currently sweating out some Taco Tuesday promos trying to get a win in here. And also jerseys305.com, you go to that website, use the promo code 5, you get 10% off your order when you make that promo code happen. So next week, we'll start talking about leading up to training camp. We're going to talk about what our top battles are, what we're going to be keeping an eye on as far as who we want to see beat out who. Who's going to be on the roster bubble? We're going to start talking about all that stuff early on. And then as training camp progresses, we'll get reports. We'll see what we're seeing. We'll hear what we're hearing. And we'll make judgments based on that when the preseason finally starts to kick in. All right. With all that said, thank you all so much for joining us. And yes, Duke, and the Tua contract. We'll talk about the Tua contract because there's going to be a Tua contract. I don't know when it's going to happen, but there's going to be a contract. I don't know. It is what it is. All right. Thank you all so much for joining us. Make sure you're tuned in to the 3 yards per carry podcast feed for more coverage. And we will see you all next week for another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. Good night.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Barney Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this act, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.